This is the best of public radio from NHPR. Dr. Lori Alvord stepped up recently at the Monadnock Summer Lyceum. The distinguished surgeon and author argued that traditional beliefs frequently informed a healthier lifestyle. She then answered a few questions from the audience as read by the Lyceum's moderator.
In your book, you cite the healing powers of singing, and you've spoken about it this morning, as one component of the Native Americans' healing medicines. Cultural anthropologist Angeles Arian writes that in many indigenous cultures, for clues to the source of a person's illness, he or she may be asked, "When did you stop singing?" If we can expand the application of this idea from an individual to that of improving the health of a population, when and in what ways has our society stopped singing? What kind of song is needed to restore population health?
Thank you. That is a very beautiful question, isn't it? And I think of the singing as when we sing, it is when we feel joy and when we feel beauty and when sometimes when we're the happiest is when we sing. And I don't know how many of you have been part of a choir or a chorus, but there's a very incredible experience that happens when you are singing together and you are creating an amazing sound. I don't know if you've experienced that before, or even when you hear a really beautiful group of singers and you're singing quietly to yourself. Do you feel what comes into you, that feeling sometimes that is sort of an energy of sorts? There is an energy when you sing. But the point being that this is where we need to be going. We need to be generating times where we come together and we create things of beauty like song. The second thing I would say is that song is vibrational. And therefore, vibrations influence energy, right? And we are energy beings. We are made of energy. And then in the Chinese world, in the acupuncture and the qi, we have meridians of qi energy. And believe me, it's real. They did a few on me, and I can feel it. Anyway, there's vibrational energy. If song is vibration, it has to be influencing our physiology. So I do feel that sound and song can be used for healing for our body as well. And I'm sure the music therapists, where there are publications, for example, of infants that hear music that are in the ICU versus the control, they get out of the ICU faster, and adults in ICUs as well. And I'm sure there's many, many more by now, but I can't keep up with the music therapy literature and all the other stuff. But it is a very powerful modality for healing.
Thank you. I have two questions here dealing with the environment. I'll read them both, and We'll move through them that way. Do you have an idea or vision of how we as Americans can change the terms of the discussion about environmental issues, and which modern things should we give up for the sake of the earth? How would it work?
Well, I think incorporating some of the things that these ancient traditions have done, in the sense of acquainting our children early on with our environment, with perhaps them spending time, or maybe that's part of a curriculum that we have for them, that they begin to get close to and love our environment. And that be part very intentional, rather than maybe they do, maybe they don't at this point. And that we as communities begin to speak more of the beauty and the value of the environment. That would start. And then I would hope from that would become change. Change would keep happening to try to go to things like solar power and wind power rather than, coal or things like that that pollute. It's a pushing of our consciousness as a society into places that are in more unity with the environment. And it starts with the children. And I don't know what we would give up. I think that there would be some very long discussions about that. Not going there at the moment.
Okay. These are some great questions here. I hope we have time for many of them. It starts with a practical question. What kind of surgery do you do? And how do you use your medical knowledge with your people? Let's start with that.
Okay, sure. So I was trained in general surgery. And for those of you who don't know what general surgery was, general surgery is the discipline that originally, before we had different types of surgery, it was surgery. Like in the late 1800s when surgery developed, general surgeons were these surgeons. And then other groups split off, like neurosurgeons and heart surgeons and plastic surgeons. But we maintained the center. And so it is predominantly surgery in the abdomen, anything in the abdomen pretty much, except the vascular, the aorta and the vena cava, but all the intestines and the gallbladder and appendix and stomach and spleen and pancreas and liver, all those things. Breast surgery, thyroid surgery, lots of different types of surgery, lumps and bumps here and there, sarcomas, you name it, hernias, a very broad swath, as well as being the trauma surgeons. When you come in and you've been in a car accident, a general surgeon is taking care of you, okay? We are also the ones who never let go of the medicine. In other words, there are many surgeons, like particularly like very high specialty, like ENT or orthopedics, who do not handle your medicine. Like if you have diabetes, they don't manage your insulin. But general surgeons tend to manage the whole patient, and we do handle all the medicine as well. I have been, working with really not so much. When I first started my first 6 years, I worked directly taking care of Native patients. More recently, I've worked more toward training Native students to become doctors for the patients. So it's at the next level of education, trying to be mentoring to them, guiding them, and helping them through that process, which is very difficult. And yet, I think that part of me really does want to go back and work with Native patients again. Maybe as I come down the downhill side of my career, I have recently left the University of Arizona, and I'm actually seeking perhaps to find a place where like-minded practitioners work together and have similar philosophies and viewpoints. So if you know of any such group, you should let me know, and I'll crash their party. Yeah.
Okay. I have two questions here that deal with sort of the tectonic changes in culture. First, looking backwards, to what do you attribute the shift from a matriarchal culture to a patriarchal culture? And do the Navajos still have a matriarchal culture? And then looking forward, how do you think we can deliver the message of love as grandmothers? What can we do? Is it too late?
Ooh, that's such a great set of questions there. Well, I have no idea how it went from matriarchal to patriarchal. I have a feeling that there was an insidious plot at some point. Just saying. I don't know. I don't know. Coyote was probably involved. I do think that we could get it back. Men have been in power for so long, but I think they also know that, and there is a movement in the last few decades toward appreciating feminine energy, even inside of males, and allowing it to be expressed. So I think that the time may be fertile for the listening now to happen, for both of the energies to balance out. Is it too late? I do not know if it's too late. I very much hope it is not too late. What I started to think of was to start organizing as women and beginning to form organizations that reach across to other countries, to sisters, and maybe even one-to-one, but also as groups, to begin starting to have other conversations about how we should do stuff, how we should do things. Are the women up for it? I'm not sure. I think we're tired. I think we've had a lot to put up with for quite a while, but I think if anyone's going to save us, it's going to be our grandmothers.
I'm starting to be mindful of time. There are great questions here. Let's put something here on the table about Navajo healing ceremonies. An interesting one that relates it to Judeo-Christian sense. In a Navajo healing ceremony, is there any getting rid of sin in the Judeo-Christian sense of it? And then a very practical, interesting question, how does one find the opportunity to participate in a Navajo healing?
Right, right. yes, so we'll take the last one first. Participation can happen. But what it requires is to become part of the community. It is not a one-stop visit in Tuba City or Chinle or Kayenta. It really is knowing the people, as you might expect for any culture, that if you want to be part of what of their healing, that type of healing, you may have to spend time there and know the people and gain the trust. Which is not to say you have to move there, but you may have to make some journeys and you may have to develop those relationships. But it can happen. I've seen it happen. We have non-natives at ceremonies, not infrequently. And then, what was the first part again?
It was, how does the Navajo healing ceremony relate to Judeo-Christian sense of ridding yourself of sin?
Yeah. Not so much. I mean, well, it's kind of like appreciative inquiry, where it's not so much about the bad stuff you did, it's about healing and repairing all your relationships and creating harmony. It's about mending and bonding and connecting. So when you say, may I walk in Hojo, that's a sense of deep interconnectedness with all things and a respect and a reverence for that way of thinking. So it's really, I think we probably know that, we didn't get along well with our cousin last week and we may not have said some nice things or whatever, but it's less focused on that and more focused on moving into a place where we reestablish harmony.
Thank you. I have one last question. Actually, I have many last questions, but we're going to have to weed it down to one for our time limitations. Do the Navajo have a word for happiness, and what does it mean?
Yeah, I think Hojo is part of the happiness, absolutely. Happiness, it's a state of being that feels... Okay, happiness, when you think of happiness, it's kind of like you get all happy because you're, I don't know, eating a piece of cake, or you're celebrating a birthday, or you're doing something that makes you laugh. Maybe there's a joke and you're momentarily happy. But for Navajo, it's a state of being, which is where you are centered, you're calm, you're feeling very, very, you're feeling very complete, and you're feeling fulfilled. And it's a deep contentment rather than a happiness that Hojo is, if that makes sense. It's a fullness of a sense of well-being.
Thank you again, Dr. Alvord, for sharing your time and expertise with us today.
To listen back to Alvord's lecture and others from the Monadnock Summer Lyceum, visit nhpr.org. Next week, the Lyceum closes the season with Lois Lowry. Author of The Giver, she'll discuss her book as it premieres on the silver screen. That's next Sunday night at 9 on the Best of Public Radio from NHPR.